Rasleela, Rasa Panchadhyaya, chapters 29-33. We've arrived at verse 8, and we're discussing this verse. Tavaryamana Patibi Pitribir Bratri Bandubi Kovinda aparitatmano nanya vartanta mohita. The husbands, fathers, and brothers, and other relatives of the gopis tried to stop them, but Krishna had already stolen their hearts. Enchanted by the sound of his flute, they refused to turn back. While the gopis were hurriedly leaving their respective places, their husbands and brothers and fathers were struck with wonder. Where were they going at 12 o'clock at night? Being young girls, they are usually protected by husbands, brothers, or fathers. Everyone forbade them from going, but they disregarded them and ran into the forest. So, of course, in Bhagavad Gita, it says we should respect our mothers and fathers as representatives of God. But if the mothers and fathers are representatives of not allowing you to go to God, or the mothers and fathers are blocking your passage to God, then you may have to circumvent them or not pay so much attention to them, depending on how old you are. If you're old enough and adult enough to make your own legal decisions. So we're discussing this principle yesterday of Bandubi, Pitribi, Bratur, Patibi, the natural caretakers in the Vedic society. We mentioned that yesterday. The protectors, the natural protectors and caretakers of women, of course, are the stronger men in their lives, fathers, husbands, brothers or elderly sons if they have one. And generally, one would not want to leave his protection or leave his loving relatives. But as we mentioned yesterday, the ultimate protection and the ultimate protector everywhere is God. Husbands and brothers and fathers can be someplace, but they can't be everywhere at every time and all times. There's many times when you're unprotected by these natural caretakers or protectors. But somehow, who's protecting the young girl, who's protecting the chaste wife when there's no husband or father or brother there? Well, obviously, God, Krishna. Husband goes to work and he calls the air conditioner repairmen to come to the house. And they come to the house to fix the air conditioning. So who's protecting the wife then? Nobody. The husbands don't think twice about that generally. But as they often say, our worst enemies are nearest at hand. Person you think is innocent, member of the working class, maybe rather not so innocent. So in these cases, in all cases, in every case, God is there according to one's destiny and what is due to them. They will receive it. Some people are destined to live through a plane crash. Husbands in Europe and the wife is flying to meet the husband. So who's protecting the wife on the airplane? Not the husband. And maybe her father, she's alone. Daughter's flying back to Delhi from Bombay. And even the plane sometimes crashes. And everyone perishes, unfortunately. But one survives. It happens. One lives. Because somehow that was their destiny. So even then, they were saved from imminent and inevitable death because of their destiny and the protection of God. Amazing arrangements. So this is the only time one can leave one's natural protectors if he's running to God. And we discussed Atmano. It says, Govinda Aparita Atmano. And Atmano is in plural here, the Jiva Goswami is saying. That indicates many. So he stole the hearts of everyone. Govinda Aparita means to steal the hearts. And we described how Govinda steals the hearts. How Krishna can steal the heart. Because stealing the heart means first stealing our senses of the body that our hearts are in. We generally become attracted to someone, not their heart, but their forms or their speech or their physical expression, in which we may not know too much about their inner hearts or their deep feelings until more meeting and association. So Krishna, because Govinda means one who pleases and fully inundates and satisfies the senses, and Krishna can do that. And the proof is the great yogis. Not only the great yogis who meditate on Paramatma, Vishnu, who is also named Govinda. There's one form of Vishnu with four arms called Govinda, and Padmanabh and Trivikram, etc. So they meditate on Govinda and their senses get completely satisfied. They become aptakam. They have no more desires, aptakam, no more desire to fulfill. They don't want to see anything beautiful or hear anything beautiful or smell or touch or taste anything beautiful. Because they're absorbed in Atmananand. They're absorbed in the bliss of experiencing their Ishtadev in the heart. Vishnu in the heart. And moreover, not only are they aptakam, for the most part, almost, but then they're considered to be Atmaram, which means very satisfied. Now, Govinda, the word Govinda is an interesting name when applied to Krishna, because he can, as Govinda in the form of Vishnu, one of the Vishnu forms is called Govinda, he can capture all the senses of the yogi and the meditator and fix those senses on him and the heart. But not everybody's a dhyan yogi or a gyan yogi. Some people are karma workers in the workers, fruitive workers, karmis or whatever you call it, karma yoga, or bhakti yogis. So they're not so much interested in meditation on the Paramatma. They're interested in a more active, personal, intimate and loving relationship with Vishnu or Ram or Krishna. So then Krishna comes as Govinda and he attracts all their senses and he satisfies them. So then we see, although someone appears not to be a yogi externally, with all the accoutrements and dress and affectations of a yogi, the long beard or whatever, orange rose, maybe a grihastha person, a married person, or a student, or a working class person. But they're bhakti, they're yogis. They're yogis because their mind and heart is always linked with Ram, Krishna. Devotion. Devotional yogis. So they, by satisfying and saturating all their senses, Govinda Paritatmana, their Atma, because we described, defined yesterday, Atma means self or selves here because it's plural. Mind or minds, and it means body. Body, mind, self, everything is the Atma. As we say, if you catch someone's heart, you have everything. If you just grab someone's hand, they may get away, leave their hand behind. But if you grab someone's heart, they're not going anywhere. So that's what love is all about, that someone grabs our heart. Our mother grabs our heart by her love, her service, her affection, dedication to the children. husband and wife grab the hearts of each other because of their love, service, and dedication, understanding, support, so many things. So that means that's the essential thing to steal, to hold on to. So Govinda did that. But moreover, someone who's, as I mentioned, a married person or working person, he's a bhakti yogi, he's also fully controlling his senses because all his senses are engaged in Govinda Seva. Govinda Seva. He's seeing Thakurji, Darshan, the Holy Dham, and saintly people, and Murti, and he's seeing the Darshan of the Shastras. He's purifying his eyes by reading the Bhagavatam, Ramayana, Mahabharata. And all his senses are purified in that way. So he becomes absorbed and captivated by Govinda to the point where he's not interested in seeing other things. He'd rather see Murtis and movies of Krishna on the television, or movies of Ram, or reruns of Ramayana. He'd rather see those, or some movies about Leelas, or even animations about Krishna or Hanuman or whatever, than go to a regular, mundane, materialistic movie. So no one will think that this businessman or student or working class person is a great yogi, driving car. And so he's driving a car, maybe nice automobile, like someone else in the highway. But inside his car, he takes the car from his home to his work, and from the work to the temple, and he buys some prasadam and he brings it home and shares it with his children. So even his car is a Rath, is Govinda Rath. And he doesn't really use his car for anything but seva. His job and his occupation is also a type of seva, to maintain his dharmic family and to possibly earn extra money to give donations to the temple or for Janmashtami or Ram Nomi, etc. Then what's going on inside his car? Is he watching television? And is he listening to the latest hit songs? Some people do, even after initiated. But generally, because he has his ears are satisfied and attracted and interested and attached to Govinda Bhajan, Hari Bhajan, Govinda Bhajan, Radha Krishna Bhajan, or Ram Bhajan, then he's driving in his car and he's listening to that. And someone right next to him with the same type of car is listening to the latest rock and roll or the latest love songs from Mumbai or Bollywood or whatever, and enjoying that. So it looks similar, but the result is different. So this gopis, they had saturated all their senses with Govinda from the very time of their birth. Their eyes were always seeing Govinda, and they're always hearing his flute and vamshi and venu, and they're always smelling his fragrance of his garland and flowers that he had worn and dropped here and there, tasting his remnant sometimes. Someone would get some makan that Krishna had stolen. Some gopi and Gokul would manage to say, "Hey, listen, Krishna robbed you this morning. Makan Chor took some of your butter. Can I have some of that?" So she'll distribute. Krishna used to distribute his remnants to the monkeys. Govinda Prasad, he would give to the Bandur. He would rob the Kumbha with the makan, butter inside, and then he would eat, give to his friends, and then he would give to the monkeys. So you don't think the gopis qualify? The gopis don't get any remnants, only monkeys and gopas get? No, the gopis also got. It's from the earliest of ages, the gopis got Mahaprasad from Krishna. Is it logical? Yes. Did it happen? Yes. Do you have any children from the very earliest of their age, they're eating Mahaprasad? Of course. And you're a family of devotees? Of course. So do you think Vrishabhanu, he's not a devotee? And Nanda Baba, they're great devotees of Vishnu and Krishna, obviously, and Radharani. So they're also Devotees do the same things. What do the gopis do? The same thing devotees do. They hear and chant and remember Krishna. They cook for Krishna. They serve Krishna. They take Krishna's prasadam. It's not much difference. As above, so below, as they say. But sometimes we think that that culture is so much different. But when Krishna was here in Gokul, was he God? Yes. And do God's devotees like to take prasadam? I believe so. So now there's some kind of extraordinary, unusual devotees that they won't take any of Krishna's remnants. It doesn't work that way. They were very much keen after it. They didn't even mind if they got it after the monkeys. So even that lila proves that prasadam can never become contaminated. Because in Padma Puran, or rather Skanda Puran, it talks about Jagannath Mahaprasad, Purushottam Mahatmyam, Purushottam Kshetra. Purushottam Kshetra Mahatmyam, Jagannath Puri. It's called Purushottam Kshetra, Purushottam Jagannathji. And he, the glories of Jagannath Mahaprasad, Jagannath Mahaprasad is, some people have had the fortune to honor that, take part in that, says that if this Mahaprasadam falls, if Jagannath Mahaprasadam falls from the mouth of a dog or a leper is eating the Mahaprasad in a Jagannath Puri, there's many lepers here and there. So if it falls, it's still not contaminated. You can take that prasad and eat it and get purified, and get the spiritualized blessings of God. We may not believe that and accept that, but that's the statement of Skanda Puran and Vyasa Muni, that the purity and sanctity of Mahaprasad is never diminished. So that was, even the gopis understood that. If Krishna feeds butter to the monkeys and we come a little later, so what? It doesn't matter. Would you refuse to take fresh butter after some monkeys? That's an interesting challenge. Nanyavar tanta mohita. They did not turn back, because they were enchanted, mohita. That's the main thing, enchantment. Enchantment. Enchantment means magic. Enchantment means a magic spell. Enchantment means captivation. Enchantment means hypnotism. Someone hypnotizes you or puts you under a spell. I'm enchanted. It's like love. It's like falling in love. Someone is put under a spell by Kamdev, Kandarpa, the god of Cupid, lust, desire. What's that funny look in your eye? Well, we have a phrase in English, I've been love struck. That's a fact. You got struck, all right. You got struck by Kamdev's bun. His bana, his arrows, he struck you right in the heart. Love struck. So there's a certain look in someone's eye when they fall in love. And maybe the husbands and wives and the audience may remember that long ago look in their eyes when they fell in love. Somehow it doesn't stay that long, that enchantment. Because that's the nature of moh. Moh is an illusion, which means it's not the real situation. Moh, we have the same word in Hindi, moh, means an illusory state, a temporary covering of one's normal perception, a temporary bewilderment or confusion or lack of perception due to some accident or drugs or intoxication. Sometimes people get pretty moha. This illusion means there's illusion and then there's truth. So maya, the sages say this maya is moha. Maya, this material world is called maya. Mayadam, haridam, Devi Dham, Shiv Dham, Vaikuntha Dham. So this is called Maya Dham, Devi. This is Durga Dham. Maya means that which is not. Maya. So that which is not means illusion. There, what is and what is factual, and what is always correct and true, and what is the natural, original, healthy state of mind and perception and health of a human being is the truth, the platform of truth. And anything, any perversion of that or dilution of that or change of that, then that becomes an illusion. I think everyone knows about this idea. It's a French word, illusion, I believe. Well, the gopis, it says mohita, but they were not mohita in a sense of an illusion, because we're actually, as the rishis and saints and even the Bhagavad Gita says, anyone who's in this material world, living in material consciousness, that I am a body and a man, woman, and of some nation, American, Russian, Indian, and this is my reality, the body, and this is my meaning and ultimate truth in life, is to enjoy this body and the senses. That is Maya, according to Bhagavad Gita. That's a great bewilderment. It's a great illusion. It's moha. It says mohita. We are all enchanted by the spell of Maya. We are all enchanted and captivated and hypnotized by the Devi or the witch or the enchantress. Enchantress means a female tantric in English. She has the ability to cast a spell on you. Doom. So everyone is under the effect of the enchantress of Maya and running everywhere in the entire world. Everyone's running in the illusion of this body is me. And that's all I am. I am this physical body, senses, and mind. And I am all these desires. And my existence is to fulfill all these desires. That's mohita. But now the gopis are saying mohita. But the gopis are Nitya Parishad, eternal associates of Krishna. They have Satchitananda bodies. Their bodies are not material. They're not prakriti. They're aprakrita. They're alokic, spiritual, transcendental, divya, sharir, spiritual bodies. And they're made of truth. The whole body is made of truth, eternal. Truth eternal, that's one element of their transcendental form. Truth eternal, sat. Then chit. They don't have to go to university. They don't have to get a degree or go to their preschool and their tuitions and tutors. They are all knowledge is with them because they are direct expansions of the source of all knowledge. Direct expansions of God. So whatever God has, they have. They're his energies. Satchit Anand. Anand. They're blissful. Self-blissful. Atmanand. Premanand. There's Sukhanand and Swarga Sukhanand. I mean, there's Indriya Sukh or Indriyanand, bliss of the senses, eating or sleeping or whatever. The gopis' bliss is Premanand, Krishna Premanand. But yet, they're enchanted. They're enchanted by their eternal beloved Lord. This is not moha in the sense of illusion, and this is not untruth in the sense of illusion. This is the highest truth, to be enchanted and attracted and interested in God. This is not Maya, this is truth. Maya means that which is not. That which is that we are eternal spiritual beings. And the gopis are saying, listen, I got enchanted by God, Mohita, and all of them. It says that they all got enchanted, Atmano. All the Atmas, all the gopis in Vrindavan became enchanted by God, and they ran. So Vrindavan is one village, and everyone in that whole village, at least the young gopis, they were enchanted by God. So that means every Atma everywhere can be enchanted by God. So one Acharya is explaining this point. Mohita is generally someone, oh, he's an illusion. Oh, she's an illusion. If we use this term in society, oh, she's an illusion. She thinks that that boy is going to marry her. Because he's already engaged to someone in England. No, but she's hoping. Or he's an illusion that, like this, that this lady will marry him. But that's illusion. We use this term often. Mo, illusion. The gopis' illusion is desirable. The gopis' bewilderment is desirable. To be in bewilderment about God. So the, what Jiva Goswami says, this word mohita, it's enchanted, but he says it means more the word of chapalya. Chapalya means they became restless. They became very restless and, like you say, what do you say? Chanchal. You say in Hindi chanchal? Chanchal means here and there, like that. So chapalya in Sanskrit means chanchal, restless. Because something is restless is not resting in one place. So chanchal, we say that Lakshmi is chanchal. I think everyone knows that. We don't only say it, we find it. Sometimes Lakshmi is resting with us, and sometimes she's restless, and she goes somewhere else and rests. And then we're poor. So this is, he says that actually they became restless, and so much restless that they ran away from everything. So he says that mohita means they were enchanted and restless. Because one may be enchanted and sit by themselves and muse. They may muse by themselves or lose themselves in contemplation or daydreaming and with some enchantment. Like so we see someone sometimes is sitting lost in his thoughts. And then you go, hey, my friend, wake up. Oh, yeah. What were you thinking about? Yeah, I was daydreaming. You've heard this term in India, they have that. People don't daydream. So, or everything's dreaming. They could do that, but they, and still be enchanted and not go anywhere. Just daydream in one place. But they are enchanted, says Sri Jiva Goswami Pad. And then chapalya means they became restless. I'm enchanted and I want to do something about it. I want to move. I'm restless. I can't stay in one place. I want to move, go here and there. So then they ran out. And that, he says that this, because he combines these two things, he says this indicates the intensity of the gopis' love for Krishna. Because it's one thing to become enchanted by God or enchanted by the idea of spiritual practices. Yes, I'm very enchanted. It's a good idea. We should start doing yoga or chant some mantras and do puja. But then we're not really moving much in that direction. We're thinking about it. We're curious and even enchanted. So he says that because of the chapalya, because they became restless, it indicates how intensely they were enchanted. Enchanted and wanting to do something and moving towards Krishna. So much that they ran away from their homes despite all the obstacles and blockings. And one other Acharya says that he talks about this mohita, and he says there's two types of mohita. Moha means material illusion, phantasmagoria, dream, spell, magic spell, moha. But there's something called spiritual moha, spiritual illusion. This makes it more complicated. So how does someone know whether they're I'm in spiritual illusion? I don't know. It looks pretty materialistic to me. But there is such a thing as spiritual illusion. And then you can know if you're in spiritual illusion if you fit one of these three categories. Because first of all, it's not called Mahamaya, it's called Vishnu Maya. There's something called Vishnu Maya, and there's called Durga Maya. Durga Maya. Devi Maya. Devi Maya, Durga Maya. This is in the material world. The illusory phantasmagoria influence of Durga, Ma Durga, over everyone in this world. This is Devi Dham. This is the place of rule of Durga. Durga. Dura means hard, difficult, hardship, struggle. And Ga means gati, to move, to travel, to attain, to achieve, to accomplish, to fulfill our dreams or achieve our ends in life. Becomes difficult in this plane. It's not the plane of Ichha Shakti, where whatever you want and you just think about it and you attain it. That's the spiritual world. It's the plane of Satya Sankalpa Shakti and Ichha Shakti. If you want something, you think of something, I desire this thing, and it appears. So they say, they give these three types. One is called Swajana, Swajana Mohita Vishnu Maya. These are three types of Moha Mohita. Three types of bewilderment or illusion cast upon devotees of the Lord by Krishna himself. This is God's intervention with his liberated Mukta Jivas, eternal associates, or those that are being liberated. So this first one is Swajana. It's pretty easy to figure out. His own people. Swajana Mohita Vishnu Maya. This type of illusion Krishna casts over Yashoda and Vasudeva and Nanda and so many of the residents and his associates in Mathura Leela and Vrindavan Leela, so that they can't understand that he's God, or he may even display some godhood or amazing power, and they're getting slightly concerned and losing a little bit of their intimacy. So then he immediately puts them in his spell, his love spell. And then they can't understand that. So they're covered, they're surrounded by a type of protective energy which prohibits them from seeing Krishna as Aishvaryasya Samagrasya Bhagavan, as that supreme, all-opulent, omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent God. He's my Lala. He's Nandalal. Yashodadulal. He didn't lift Govardhan Hill. All the cowherd men lifted. He was lifting like this, Giridhari. He didn't do it. Nanda Baba had his Lati up there, and Rishabhanu, and all the boys had their sticks up there. That's how come it was lifted. Otherwise, how is it possible, little boy? So this is, we think that Krishna, as Giridhari, Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, because we're not in Swajana Mohita Vishnu Maya. We're in another kind of moha. We're just seeing things from the perspective of Shastra and from the Tattva Siddhanta. But there, on the plane of intimate exchanges of love, then his own associates, he keeps them in a spiritual love illusion. I mean, if you're in love, that itself is a type of illusion. If you are in love, that is a type of illusion, but let it stay lasting as long as it can. Because usually that illusion comes to an end at some time, and the love disappears, and then the hard reality of duty and work and everything else comes into play. Under the receding background of the former love, which again, after some years, becomes more like a memory than a reality. We're discussing how Bhagavan Sri Krishna has three types of moha, Mohita Vishnu Maya, which he uses with his devotees and also with those he liberates. We talked about Swajana Mohita Vishnumaya. And then there's Samohita. There's Swajana and Samohita. Swajana Mohita Vishnumaya. This is used for his relatives, the mother and father, his Swajan. But the gopis are not his immediate relatives. They're his prayasis, his dearest sakis and beloveds. And the special maya for them is Samohita Mohita Vishnumaya. Samohita. So there's one commentary. The word here is Mohita. So he said, what Mohita? Samohita. And Samohita means complete, completely covered over. Because you have to really be covered over by illusion, or at least of a spiritual nature, to totally forget your father, mother, husbands, brothers, sons, families, duties, your varna and your ashram dharma, which we heard in the other verses. The gopis gave up their varna dharma and ashram dharma. They forgot everything. They didn't even remember it. They became so much bewildered. But someone might say, how can you forget your profession? How can you forget your family? How can you forget your mother? No, I haven't forgotten, but I'm going to God. Sometimes people ask, you're not thinking of her? So they had totally become enchanted by Krishna, and then Krishna covered them with Samohita, Mohita Vishnu Maya. That's his ultimate. It's ultimate Vishnu Maya, Mohita Vishnu Maya, is this one of the three types he has. Now there's another one that Krishna uses for other persons that aren't his Swajana and aren't his Gopikas. This is called Vimukta. Vimukta Mohita Vishnu Maya. And Krishna uses this with the likes and personalities like King Kans in Mathura. That he puts him in a total bewilderment that King Kansa thinks that Krishna is just somebody's son, and it's predicted that maybe he'll kill him. Devaki's eighth son will kill him, but some boy, and we'll invite him here to the wrestling match, the Rangashala in Mathura, and my wrestlers, Chanuar and Mushtika, they will finish him in no time. He says, some boy. He had no idea that Krishna is Bhagavan, Swayam Bhagavan, God, Vishnu. Otherwise, why would he be so foolish? He's not stupid. Kansa is not stupid. But he was covered by a Mohita, a Vishnu Maya, because Krishna wanted to liberate him. And Vimukta Mohita Vishnu Maya. That type of Maya or illusion which Krishna covers those he wants to liberate. He covers them so that they think, oh, he's an ordinary fighter. And Dwarka Leela, there are so many examples of persons that Krishna employed this Vishnu Maya. Vimukta, Vimukta, Mohita, Vishnu Maya. Besides Kamsa, mostly demons, etc., that he wanted to liberate. Mostly all the examples are actually asuras and demons. So there's one gentleman in Dwarka Leela named Pondraka. Pondraka was a great king, powerful king in South India, and he thought, who is this Dwarkadish? He's going around sometimes with two arms, sometimes with four arms. Anybody can have four arms. So then Pondraka went down to some costume shop. Pondraka, Raja Pondraka, he went down to some costume shop. And he got two extra arms made. They were made of cardboard or paper mache or something. And they looked very real. They were painted blue in color, and they had some jewelry and looked quite real. So then he came out on the battlefield with Dwarkadish, Krishna, and Dwarka. He said, Are, hey, Dwarkadish, who are you? You have four arms. I also have four arms. And he held up his two cardboard paper mache fake, Bekar arms, Bekar Bahu. his fake arms. And Krishna saw that when he came on the battlefield. He challenged Krishna to battle in Dwarka. And Krishna turned to Uddhav, his minister, and said, "What is this? Who is this joker? Who is this fool? I'm Chaturbhuj Narayan," because when Dwarkadish was fighting, then he would appear like Chaturbhuj Narayan. It's Krishna, but in this Narayan form for the purpose of liberating demons and fighting demons in his Dwarka Leela. So I'm the only one who has four arms. And so then this Pondraka says, "Listen, with my four arms, I challenge you, Dwarkadish. I will send you to the kingdom of Yamaraj. I will send you to hell. Ha ha, watch me." So Krishna, he was being entertained for some minutes and amused for some minutes by the joking and taunting and heavy words of this Kshatriya challenging Krishna to battle. And then without further ado, Krishna took a few arrows. He took his disposed of Pondraka with a few arrows. He shot a few arrows and sent Pondraka with his two cardboard arms and two real arms. He sent him to the kingdom of Yamaraj. But because he was utilizing his Vimukta Moita Vishnumaya, he thought all the time that Krishna was another hero or Kshatriya like him, because he was an illusion. And Krishna did that to Vimukta to liberate him, to give him a special form of liberation. Vimukta, Vishesh Mukti. So Krishna does that. He makes arrangements to liberate even the demons. So this is the, basically, there's one commentary here at the by Vishnu Chakravarti. He says that this mohita means bewilderment and love. As I mentioned, love is the ultimate bewilderment. When one falls in love, he's really in moha. He really gets bewildered. Somehow he gets convinced that he should marry this person, live with this person for the rest of his life, and give up his freedom and independence. So he says this is bewilderment and love. And due to their extreme love, not that they were somewhat confused or bewildered about their duties and temporarily under a spell, but because of the intense enchantment and bewilderment caused by their beloved, then they gave up all their duties, their varna dharma, their ashram dharma, and even their immediate protectors. Because we already heard in the previous verses, they gave up milking cows and boiling milk, let it burn and boil on the stove. They were cooking in an oven. They didn't care about cooking. These are main duties for wives. And then they didn't care about their dressing. Some of them were serving their husbands and bringing warm water to their husbands to bathe, and they just dropped the buckets on the floor and went running out the door. So they were able to give up all these things because of their intensity of their love. And then he goes on to say is that, how is it possible? Because we mentioned in the verse it says, pati, pitri, bratri, says their pati, their husbands, and their pitri, that means their relatives or their father, their husbands or their fathers if they were unmarried, the braja kanyas, or their own brothers, their elder brothers. How is it they just let them go out of the house? They're simply weak, young little girls, 14, 15. All these men can't get together because it's joint family. It's not one father. It's their father-in-law. He's one. But then there may be other seniors also. Their father-in-law's father is in the house, or their in-laws, their brother-in-laws, and so many male figures are in any joint family. They can all get together. So he says that because their hearts were stolen And Mohita means that the gopis were moving like puppets, pulled by strings. He often has used this analogy. And that because they were, because a puppet, a marionette, he moves by the strings of the controller. So the supreme controller of the gopis' lives was Krishna. And no one could interfere with that. So this is due to their intensity of their love. And then he makes a very nice statement here in this verse, and this theme comes up more in other places in these upcoming verses, 9 through 11. He says that Yoga Maya, Krishna's spiritual energy, Krishna's spiritual potency, that fulfills his desires and makes all kinds of arrangements for his eternal pastimes. And she did something amazing, because Yoga Maya, she herself is a spiritual enchantress. She's a yogini, a mahayogini. She has all mystic powers. But it says that when the reason that the husbands and fathers and brothers didn't stop their daughters or wives from going out, because Yoga Maya made replica copies. She made exact copies of their wives, because they didn't see that their wives were going out. They didn't even see that their wives or daughters are going out. They're not going anywhere. So that's, he answers the question, why didn't they stop them? How couldn't they stop them? Why didn't they stop them? Because there was no reason to stop them. The wives which they married, or the daughters which they conceived as gopas, they were there in their bedrooms or with their relatives or family members. They hadn't gone anywhere. So no need to respond or react. But what she made is the original spiritual bodies of the gopis, they ran out. And they escaped under the power of Yoga Maya. No one could see. Everyone thought, oh, they're here. Are they here or are they not here? Because sometimes even people, they wonder, they see someone who's in a strange state of mind. They say, are you here or are you somewhere else? Are you here or you're somewhere else? So the gopis were there, very much there, visibly, tangibly there. But that's not the real self. The physical, tangible body is the moha. That is the maya. That is the illusion that we have for a few years. We carry this illusion, and we live out of this illusion and operate out of this illusion called the material body. And people think that this material body is my wife or my daughter or my husband or my son. This is all part of the continuous illusion of Maya, the external energy. So the gopis are showing here that the original spiritual body is something different. That body is spiritual, it belongs with the Supreme Spirit, Krishna. He's the origin of all the spiritual bodies. And his arrangement and his energies, Daivi Shakti, his Karmana Devanetrena, the demigods and all the arrangements here, we get these bodies in this plane, in the intervention of Vishnu. But that spiritual body, Mameyavamsho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, that Sanatan Jiva, that Sanatan, that eternal body, is part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna is Satchitananda, and we are all Satchitananda. So Krishna called forth the Satchitananda bodies. He summoned them. He enchanted them. He increased their love to such an intensity, they said, yes, I don't need this material body. Let me run in my spiritual body. And Yoga Maya arranged that they could go there in their spiritual bodies and dance with Krishna, and at the same time carry on with their lives as gopis, daughters, and wives. Very amazing arrangement of course, spiritual maya, yoga maya, Krishna's will and energy. Our Gurudev, Srila Prabhupada, he ties this to the modern person. He says that when a person attains Krishna, when a person is attracted to Krishna and he becomes fully absorbed in remembering and thinking about God, then he doesn't care anymore for worldly duties. And this is a very unusual position. And it's called a man of faith, a Vishwash Jana, Shraddhalu. Shraddhalu means one who is possessed or has strong amount of faith. Bhagavan Shraddhalu. Strong faith in God. That he feels and he realizes and feels that God is taking care of everyone. And God will also take care of me. Very, very rare personality. So then he gives up everything, all his worldly duties, generally some sadhu or some young man, and he goes to find God. And he wanders here and there to holy places. And what he finds as he wanders, that wherever he goes, he gets some food. Even in America, some young people, they wander and they move here and there looking for God, young men generally. And they're just wandering and reading some spiritual books and searching. It's very, very rare, obviously. People will think they're crazy. And how will you maintain yourself and what will you do? But the sadhus, and India has thousands of them, and saintly people and spiritual aspirants around the world, they actually have so much faith that they feel if I run to God and I don't care about anything in this world, God will take care. Because actually, what is the logic of this philosophy? Well, God is feeding everyone. Do the animals work? Do the birds? Do the birds go to college? Do they work? They move here and there, but basically God is giving them food. God is giving them shelter. God is arranging everywhere. Because on this planet, the only entities, the only living entities that work hard are the human beings. The human beings are the most intelligent and crown of creation, but they work like more than animals. Like sometimes they say in America, he's working like a dog. No, he's working more than a dog. Because a dog, he sleeps practically 12 hours a day or more. And when he wakes up, he feels hungry. He kind of runs around here and there for a half hour, finds something to eat, and goes back to sleep. He has a fairly simple life. But the job is getting done. He's eating, he's sleeping, ahara nidra maitun bhayam. He's eating in his own way, sleeping in his own way, mating in his own way, and he has an occasional altercation and disagreement with his friends occasionally. Some arguments, different viewpoints, and a few barks, a few bites, a few scratches. So we do the same thing in our own way. We get in arguments and fights. We fight, we sleep, we do all these things. So the intellectual person, the somewhat detached person will say, what are human beings doing that's so glorified? They're working hard to get some money to eat. Then they have to sleep somewhere, so they have an apartment or a house. And then they feel lonely, they want some company, so they get married, and they live in families, and they produce more families, and then they get old and they die. But animals do the same thing in their own way. They sleep somewhere on the street, under a bench, anywhere. So maybe the quality of our eating and sleeping is different, but we eat, sleep, mate, defend, and fight and die and start over again, and so do the animals. So some people, they look for God and they don't care about their duties. And they find that God takes care of them. There are sadhus in Europe and Russia and India They've been wandering for years. And sometimes they meet someone and says, oh, you're wandering. Why don't you live on my farm? Why don't you take this house over here? Those that actually depend fully on God and surrender their lives fully to God, they see that God never lets them down. But only one out of every 100 million people in this world has that degree of faith, that degree of vishwas. Everyone thinks, how is it possible? How will I live? How will I, what about my pension? What about my old age? What about my hospitalization? The sadhu wanders around, he gets sick, and he says, he asks another sadhu, is there any hospitals around here? Yes, there's one charitable hospital, only for sadhus. It's run by some Marwaris. You go there, they have very nice hospital. So he goes there, and he gets free hospitalization. I remember once I was wandering in the north, going to Haridwar in Rishikesh. And I didn't know anyone there. It was back in the 80s. Or I forget, I was on by myself. So I went there and I didn't have any money really either. I was just wandering around India at the time on a tourist visa or whatever. So I went to Haridwar and I was thinking, where will I stay? It's a little cold here at night. And then I saw some sadhus going to one ashram. So I went there. Of course, I'm a Westerner. And then I went there and I said, what's going on here? He said, this is an ashram. It's for sadhus. Where are you from? I came from Vrindavan. I'm just wandering up here. And back in the early 80s, I came once, wandering around. And then they said, okay. And I said, because I was wearing saffron, sadhu, sannyasi, brahmachari. Said, we have a law in our ashram. You can get one room for 3 days, and you get 1 liter of cow's milk every day, and we give 2 meals a day in the morning and evening. And you can stay here for free. I said, that's nice. And the ashram was right on the bank of the Ganga. I thought, this is better than a hotel. I mean, if you're a grihastha and a married person, you want to go to Haridwar Rishikesh, it costs a lot of money. Free food, free room, and a liter of milk or half a liter of milk every day from their own goshala for the sadhu seva. So this is, in America, they have a similar arrangement. It started by some Christian groups where people that wander from place to place, they get to different cities and they can go to these places and get a free room and free food in different cities. It's called YMCA and all these type of things. So even in Western countries who don't, you have the tradition of Indian sadhus and sadhu seva, they also have a principle of serving the wandering mendicants, of serving those that just depend on God. Because if, and the sadhu doesn't think, well, if I don't, he thinks, okay, if there's no place to stay, I sleep under the trees. I remember one great saint, he said, I said, you have nowhere to stay. You have no house. He said, no, don't you see my house? The sky is my roof. The sky is my roof. The four directions are my walls. And the earth is my floor. And the sacred pure rivers are my source of water to bathe and drink and wash. And the trees and the herbs and the plants growing everywhere in this world are my source of food. I remember when we once were in America and then traveling in the summer, and you don't even have to have any money. You can just wander around here and there. And go into a forest, you can find so many plants and herbs and fruits to eat, even in America. So those people that depend on God, God never lets them down. And Bhagavad Gita says this, and every Indian knows this, but no one really believes it that much to make it a lifestyle or make it a philosophy. Ananyas chintyanto mam yejana pariyupashate tesham nityab yuktanam yogakshemam mahamyaham. Krishna is telling in Gita that one who is fixed on God and faithful in God, ananyas chintyanto mam, ananya chinta, he's always thinking of God and praying to God, God, I'm searching for you. And actually, a sadhu, he's searching for God. He's actually realizing God every day. They say the pilgrim's journey, he's on a journey not to realize God. He's realizing God every day of his journey. But when he dies, he'll go to God. That's the pilgrim's journey. Because someone who depends on God and wanders like a sadhu or a mendicant, then he sees the hand of God and the love of God and the kindness of God in his everyday life. We have this personal experience, and so many others do also. God exists. So let's go on. Of course, we may not be totally bewildered by Krishna's flute song, but somehow we have to come to that point of what the gopis are teaching in this verse, that Govinda paritatmano mohita, that their love for Krishna was so intense. Their love for Krishna was so intense that they could give up everything. We know that our love for God is not intense. We have so many conditions and so many fears and so many attachments. Everyone knows it. But we can appreciate someone who doesn't. We can appreciate someone who doesn't have attachments and fears, and he's actually dependent on God. I've personally seen, and I have so many friends that have seen, they've seen God. Someone says, oh, Swamiji, have you seen God? Swamiji, have you seen God? I've been seeing God for years. I've been seeing him for years. And every saintly person, a serious sadhaka, Krishna Bhakta, Radha Krishna worship, he's seeing God. He's seeing his love, his mercy, his help, his kindness. In every unbelievable way. I remember once my godbrother, he was so much wanting to come to Vrindavan. But he didn't have any money. He lived in America. He wanted to visit Vrindavan. He hadn't been here in years and years and years. And he was very busy with his family and whatnot. And no extra money to come to India with his wife, children. So then, just before there's an annual festival in Vrindavan, many devotees get together. So he wanted to take part in that festival. So right before that festival, some uncle called him. He said, "Listen, I'm just thinking about you, and I haven't heard from you in a long time," because they don't have joint families there. "So I've been thinking about you, my nephew, and I wanted to send you $8,000. So if you could give your bank account number." So he gave his, this is a true story. He gave his bank account number, and his uncle, his long lost uncle, who he hadn't seen since he was 10 years old and he was 45. He wired into his bank $8,000, and there he was. He was off to Vrindavan. So he was seeing God. He was seeing God completely. He had a sankalpa. He had a desire to come to Vrindavan to see God, to see Banki Bihari and Radharaman. He's a Sakshat Bhagavan, and a Sakshat Leela style, he's a Bhagavan. And who arranged it? His uncle arranged it? Krishna arranged it. This is God. The miracles, the amazing things. And devotees that are fully surrendered, they have so many hundreds of miracles and thousands of amazing things that increases their faith, increases their belief. It doesn't become a belief. For an advanced surrendered devotee, God is not a belief. God is not a faith. God is the reality of their life. They don't say, I believe in God. I really have a lot of belief in God. No, God, I am living with God. And God is living with me. Some people say, I believe in God. I have faith in God. But the saintly people say, I'm living with God. So what's better, to believe in this girl that maybe she'll marry you someday? Or maybe, or to actually marry her. So to believe in God, hoping that someday you'll realize him or live with him, is nice. But the surrendered devotees who give up everything, then God comes and gives everything to them. So we can start the ninth verse and in our continuing discussion here. Because we're hearing, we've heard about the difficulties, and since the last five verses, we're hearing about the Nayakas running to Krishna. First, the hero came, he saw the setting, beautiful environment, he became stimulated to love, he played his flute, and he invited all his gopis to come and join him, Krishna. And then it says they ran out of their houses. Then all of a sudden, Vyasadeva says, well, wait a minute. Let me tell you, it wasn't so easy that they didn't just run out of their houses like there's a fire and you run out of your house. It's easy to run out of your house. Or if the ice cream truck comes and your child runs out of the house to buy some ice cream, you know, from the truck on the street. We run out of your house to go somewhere. Then he spent five verses saying, well, it wasn't that they just ran out of their house. It wasn't so easy. It was extremely difficult. And do you know how much difficulty they underwent? Then there was a long discussion about how they ran away from their dharma, and they ran away from their varna and ashram dharma, and they left their names behind. They left their shyness, their lajadharma, all the basic characteristics and virtues and assets of a woman they discarded and left in their homes to run into the forest to dance with Krishna. Their personal laja dharma, the shyness of a woman, this is one of her great qualities, traditional women. And then there are all their other dharmas. So now he's finished that. Now he wants to explain some that didn't get out. Because the other verses said they somehow disregarded their superiors, and they had a lot of obstacles and a lot of opposition and a lot of difficulties, but they made it. Because of their mohita, because of the intensity of their love, they got out. And Yogamaya helped them and so many other arrangements by Krishna to fulfill this lila. But now we find out about some other gopis that didn't get out. So I was, wait a minute, how do you have a love story without a lover and a beloved? There's a lover, Krishna. Okay, and then the beloved never met him. Well, you can't have a love story without a lover and a beloved. Nayaka, Nayaka. Antar griha kata kashchid Gopya labda vinirgama Krishnam tadbhavana yukta dadyor milita lochana. Some gopis couldn't get out. That's like some people try to run away from their houses. I know in India, some young men, they tried to run away to God and go to Haridwar, Rishikesh, go to some temple, go live with some guru in his ashram. Then the parents come there with policemen or all kinds of powerful personalities and tell the guru, if you don't return our son, then we will arrest you and we will take over your ashram or whatever. They threaten them. So then the son goes back home, He goes back to college, and the rest is history. So not everybody gets out that tries to get out. Not everybody that approaches God is successful either. So some gopis, they couldn't manage to get out of their houses. What did they do? Did they cry and lament and throw a temper tantrum and start cursing their relatives and becoming angry? No. They stayed home, closed their eyes, and meditated on Krishna. Stayed home, closed their eyes, and meditated on Krishna. Krishnam tadbhavana yukta dadyu milita lochan. Milita means they close their eyes. Meditation is done with closed eyes. So there's less vikshep or distraction. And Bhagavad Gita, Dhyan Yoga chapter, Krishna is saying that yoga, one should meditate with half-closed eyes. That's half-closed eyes. They should be half-closed. Because if you fully close your eyes, then your mind may also close. And then you'll fall asleep. And your dhyanam will become snoram. Your dhyanam will become snoram. Instead of meditating, you'll be snoring. Like this. Being unable to go to Krishna, the gopis began to meditate upon his transcendental form by closing his eyes. Closing their eyes. This is my Gurudev's translation. He's very, generally very personal and specific in his translations. The one other translation we cited of this verse, Antargriha Gata Kashchid, is that they couldn't get out, they stayed at home, and they meditated on Krishna. All right. But that meditation can be many things. Meditate on the name, meditating on the form. But my Gurudev said, they meditated on Krishna's form by closing their eyes. Because as you know, it's easier to meditate on form than the formless. Even those advocates of meditation, even the impersonalists, the Brahmavadis or the Brahmasuja Mukti, the Advaitin school that does not worship the personal form of God, they worship Brahman or the light, the energy, the consciousness. They realize how difficult it is for their sadhakas to meditate on the formless absolute. Because if you join the teachings of Shankara and follow them, and you learn meditation, if the guru says, sit down and meditate on nothing. Close your eyes and meditate on nothing. Well, that nothing will become something in 1 minute. And then in 2 minutes will become something and many things and thousands of things. Because the mind cannot be devoid of image or form or idea or thought. So then they say, all right, listen, this is a little tough to meditate on the white light of consciousness, to meditate on the vast, undifferentiated. It's a little difficult, Guruji, to meditate on the formless Brahman. It's nirupam, nirgunam, nirlakshanam, no characteristics, no form. So then the Guruji will say, all right. And many ashrams, they also install deities. There's a famous ashram of one Advaitin scholar in Vrindavan. And they have a deity of dancing Gopal that they meditate on, the Shankarites and Advaitins. So the gopis are meditating on Krishna's form because his form is sweetness. And it's easy to meditate on sweet things, sweet memories, sweet relationships. So this is, Krishna is the object of their meditation. Now the question can be asked, how is it that if Krishna plays the flute and invites Radharani, she's not going to come to the rasa dance? Radharani, without Radharani, there's no rasa dance. Radharani is Rasheshri. She is that binding link in the chain of the gopis. Just like in a motorcycle or a bicycle, there's so many links in that chain that propels the bicycle. But there's one called a connecting link, if you know anything. And it's shaped a little differently, and it connects this one with that one. It has a little teeth like the little arrangement. And if that's if you take that out, then the whole chain is broken. That's the essential one. If you have the whole chain without the connecting link, you don't connect. And you don't go anywhere. No movement, no progress, no advancement. Radharani is compared to that connecting or binding link in the chain of the Ras Mandal. If Radharani is not there, there's no dance. If Radharani is not there, there's no progress in romantic exchanges. If Radharani is not there, there's no movement. Ras means movement. Love means movement. But she is a binding link in that Ras, that chain of Ras. Because it says that, you'll see later, Vyasadeva and Shukadeva are describing, one gopi linked her arms with another gopi. They linked their arms. They connected their arms together like links in a chain. The parts of a chain are called the links. The links, the parts of a chain, bicycle chain, motorcycle chain. Then the binding link, the joining piece. So they're all there, but until Radharani comes, no movement. Because Krishna won't start dancing until Radharani gets there. And incidentally, Radharani comes last. All the other gopis come first. And Krishna's waiting. Oh, it's very nice. All the gopis have come. But where's Radha? She's taking her time, getting dressed, maybe partially dressed. One cudgel on one eye. Now, when she comes, then... So who are these gopis that are restrained at home and have to meditate? Do you want to meditate on your lover or be with your lover? Do you want to meditate on your dinner or eat your dinner? You want to eat your evening prasadam. No, tonight you tell your wife, I'm not eating tonight, I'm meditating. I'm meditating on puri sabji, pakora chutney. Little kheer, gulab jamun. How long will that meditation last? How much satisfied you'll be? How much you'll sleep after that meditation? All night long you'll be wandering around, where's my dinner? So obviously those that stayed home and meditated weren't so fortunate on that particular night. Who were they? Were they the Nitya Parishads, eternal associates and family members of Krishna? These eternal gopis? No. They were, according to the Acharyas, they were the Upanishads. In their previous life, they were great rishis, shrutis. The great shrutis. Shrutis, of course, the shruti is a body of knowledge. The original Veda is called Shruti. But the Shrutis personified, the Upanishads, they were sages with a form. And after hearing an understanding about the glories of Krishna, they became desirous to become gopis. And they started doing more austerities and following in the footsteps, Gopi Anugata, Gopi Bhajan. And praying and serving and worshiping in the mood of gopis. And eventually, when Krishna came to this world and showed his Boma Vrindavan Leela, Prakat Leela in this material world, then these gopis appeared. These great sages, these shrutis, Upanishads, they took birth from the wounds of gopis. And then they became gopis. So they were kept home. Now, why is that? Why did they not make it on that night? Because there's elaborate discussion by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, but these particular sages who were rewarded with a birth as gopis, they're called sadhana siddha gopis. They had in sadhana as sadhakas, and then they were awarded a birth in Krishna's lila as gopis. But their relationship was with Krishna was not yet fully developed or cultured to the highest extent of love. So then they had to meditate, and then they associated more with Krishna's associates, and then they, only by associating with Krishna's eternal loving devotees, the gopis, could they actually understand or get that final refinement of their love for Krishna, which enabled them. But there's an interesting point here that one commentary makes. What it seems that we're talking about love of God. We're talking about a rasa dance, the famous divine dance and celebration of love. Now we're talking about yoga and meditation. Says Krishna bhavana yukta dadura milita lochana. Dadyu means they meditated. Dhyanam, we say dhyan. Dhyan is one of the limbs of yoga, obviously. So how is it that Krishna's associates, the gopis, are now doing yoga? They're now doing meditation. So actually, we see that even in bhakti, and this is example is there, bhakti yoga, which is the yoga of devotion, devotional love or devotional service, dhyana or meditation is very big part of bhakti. In fact, in the different parts in the Rasa-lila, there are so many verses to describe. I think there's 7 or 8 different verses in the Rasa-lila describing meditation, how the gopis meditate. So this is, when do they meditate? When the gopis, it's described in Rasa-lila, the gopis resort to meditation in separation. When they're not in Krishna's presence, then they meditate on Krishna. They meditate on Krishna's smiles. They meditate on his movements. They meditate on his funny words and sweet words that he speaks to them or spoke to them when they met. So in separation, when they're not in his physical presence, then even Radharani and other gopis, they meditate on Krishna. And then by doing that, they feel Krishna's presence. And then even when they're with Krishna, there's one verse in Rasa-lila that says that even when they're directly in the presence of Krishna, even then sometimes they resort to meditation. Sounds very strange. You're standing right opposite your beloved, and you think, yes, now I'm going to meditate. I'm going to meditate on my beloved. No, it says that when Krishna returned to the gopis after he disappeared from them in the rasa dance, then some gopi, she stood at a distance and she was staring at Krishna's form. She was in the presence of Krishna directly, sakshat darshan with Bhagavan, one of his intimate gopis. And she took Krishna's form through the aperture of her eyes. She actually took his form through her eyes, and she deeply meditated and was embracing Krishna in her heart. So even when there, this verse is saying there that in meditation, she took Krishna through her eyes and embraced him in her heart. He was standing at some distance, and he had returned to them after separating, and they were searching for him and singing out their hearts in Gopi Geet. And even then, they were in his presence and deeply meditating on him. So this is obviously, in the gopis' example, is that Physical presence is much more desirable than meditating in absence. That they want to be with Krishna, not be in his absence. So these gopis that were the former Shrutis and Upanishads, they were a little unfortunate on this particular night that they were in the absence of Krishna and had resort to meditation. So then someone may ask the question, what is the relationship? How is it the Brajagopis are practicing yoga in their devotion? There's yoga. We see in these verses of Rasleela, the gopis are practicing yoga and doing dhyan and experiencing samadhi in the course of their loving relationship with Krishna. So there's some verses here. If you look at Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, what is the definition of yoga? According to Patanjali, yoga means this. Yoga is a practice which controls the thoughts. Yoga is the practice which controls the thoughts. Yoga Chitta Nirodha. These are famous. Patanjali's Yoga Sutras are quite many of them. But there are certain key shlokas which are often learned by yogis and students of meditation in the West. Yoga Chitta Nirodha. Sometimes it's translated as quieting all your thoughts, stilling your thoughts. But the literal meaning is practicing controlling your thoughts. Yoga Chitta Nirodha. Chitta Nirodha. So who is controlling your thoughts more than the gopis? If this is the meaning of yoga, which is a definition of yoga, Yoga Chitta Nirodha, they were the greatest yogis controlling your thoughts. They're always thinking of Krishna at every moment. They never forgot Krishna. They would think of Krishna when they're dreaming, have Leela thinking of Krishna and serving him in their dreams. And they're waking, they're thinking of Krishna. Now we see what is the meaning. There's another definition here. Is that what is the meaning of dhyanam? Well, one meaning is that potentially says that dhyanam, the fullest meaning of dhyan is that object which one meditates on, which gives one the greatest pleasure. To meditate on the, so in other words, the supremely pleasurable object is the easiest object to meditate on. This is actually a shloka from Patanjali. Something that's supremely pleasurable is easy to meditate on because the mind can be captured fully. So it's the gopis, they are obviously their object of meditation is the greatest source of their pleasure. So their meditation is that. Their dhyanam is meditating on the most supremely desirable and pleasing object. Krishna tadbhavana yukta. Krishna tadbhavana yukta. But they are meditating in love. Bhavana. It says here, ecstatic love. Krishna tadbhavana yukta. Yukta means that they were linked with, they were joined with Krishna, ecstatic love. This is, who could be a more pleasing object to meditate on than Krishna? Leela Madhurya Krishna, Rupa Madhurya Krishna, Vena Madhurya Krishna, Prema Madhurya Krishna. Because he says that the ultimate dhyanam, potentially, is to meditate on a supremely pleasing object. To meditate on a supremely pleasing object. So, you can think about it. If you meditate on some favorite pleasing food, will you get really, really absorbed in that meditation or some pleasurable experience? So now we've talked about yoga and dhyanam, but what about samadhi? Samadhi is siddhi ishra praninidhanat. Ishvara Prananidhanat. That's why it's very interesting, because many people study yoga, potentially yoga sutras, and they come to the conclusion that God is Brahman, that God is impersonal. But Patanjali himself, that great yogi Patanjali, the key word, because the perfection of yoga is asan, pranayama, and finally you get to dhyanam and then samadhi. So in the definition of samadhi, he talks about the Ishvara, not Brahman. Ishvara, Ishvara prananidhanat, Ishvara prananidhanat. He says, samadhi siddhi Ishvara prananidhanat. The perfection of samadhi is accomplished by devotion to the Supreme Lord. This is Patanjali. The perfection of samadhi is accomplished or attained by devotion to Ishvara. Ishvara Parama Krishna. Sachit Ananda Vigraha. Anadi Radir Govinda Sarva Karna Karnam. Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham. Bhajami. This is yoga, this is dhyanam, this is samadhi. Now the gopis, as we'll hear in the future classes, they began to meditate on Krishna's transcendental form. There could be no more pleasing form than the transcendental form of Krishna. How many paintings and posters of various forms of Krishna and Vrindavan are there in India? How many various posters and paintings and depictions are there of Vishnu in India? There's a lot of Vishnu, but there's millions and billions of Krishna, because his form is very pleasing and satisfying to look at. Little chubby, fat little child stealing butter, or his mother caressing him, or feeding him, or scolding him, or he's swinging on a julan with his beloved, or he's playing holi with the gopis and the suckas and suckies, or jalkeli, or dancing and rot. So many beautiful leelas and beautiful forms that Krishna displays in these leelas. So this is samadhi siddhi, Ishvara prananidhanat. So this proves, this verse here, although it sounds unfortunate that they can't be in the direct presence of Krishna, it proves that the Braja gopis are the greatest yogis. We talked about their detachment, their sarva dharman prityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. They gave up their ashram dharma and their varna dharma. All of that's been established by Vyasadeva. So we know that they're some type of, they renounced. And okay, it's one thing to renounce, it's another thing to be a yogi. Some people renounce and run away and have nothing, but they're not yogis. They're not expert in dhyan and samadhi. It's a whole other field, another accomplishment. You may be renounced, I have nothing, I'm just wandering around and lying on the ground and eating some food, whatever God provides. That doesn't mean you're a city yogi, or that you're a realized yogi, or you're experiencing this sarva city Ishvara praninidat, praninidhanat. Doesn't mean that. But the gopis renounced family, friends, relatives, comfort of house, even safety and protection of their physical bodies. They're dressing, they're eating, they're somewhere eating, they left it. But now we're finding, not only were they detached, renounced, but they were the greatest yogis. This verse proves that they were adept in dhyan, yoga. And this, as I mentioned, it's mentioned in 8 different verses in the Bhagavatam. This is also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. That's why it's an interesting point. When you read the Bhagavad Gita, you find how so many of the statements and philosophy and Tattva Siddhanta of Bhagavad Gita are actually proven and most perfectly exemplified by the gopis. There's one verse in Bhagavad Gita at the conclusion of the yoga chapter, chapter 6. Chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita is Dhyan Yoga. So Dhyan Yoga, Krishna is describing Dhyan Yoga, meditative yogi, describing the yogis, describing the yoga path, celibacy, brahmacharya, living in a lonely place, controlling the breath, controlling the mind. Many statements are there about yoga in the 6th chapter of Gita. And Krishna concludes the chapter by saying, Yoginam Yoginam api sarvesham madgatane taratmane sharavan bhajate yomam same yuktatta mohamata same yuktatta mohamata. He says, this is the greatest yogi, the Ishvara Praninidhanat, that Samadhi City, the Samadhi City Ishvara Praninidhana. This is the greatest yogi, one who has Shraddha in Ishvara, and he's Yuktatmana. So you see this verse, it says, Krishna Bhavana Yukta, Yuktatmana. Yuktatmana. The gopis themselves, this verse, chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita, verse 47, is exemplified. The example of this verse is the Brajagopis. And the example of the Brajagopis doing meditation, dhyanam, and being the best of yogis is right here in chapter 29, verse 9. Sa me yuktatamo mata. Yuktatamo. Yukta atma. Their atma is completely unified with me. There's no greater Yoginam api sarvesham, Krishna says. Yoginam api sarvesham. Thousand, lakhs and lakhs of yogis. So many city yogis and anime, they want property, city, and they have desire. They want power, influence, fame, tantric power. They're yogis. But these gopis, the village girls, yes, they are Yoginam api sarvesham. They're, of all the yogis, these gopis are the best. Because they are totally unified with Krishna. Meditating on Krishna's Naam, Rup, Gun, and Leela. At every moment. 24 hours a day. So this, of course, this theme is also there, which we'll discuss more in the future. That separation and union. Viraha and Sambhog Milan. Separation from God and meeting of God or union with God. So these gopis, other gopis ran out of their houses. We heard in verse 28-29, they couldn't be stopped by the mercy of Yogamaya and Krishna. They ran out and didn't turn back, and they met Krishna and they danced throughout the night in the celebration of love. But these gopis couldn't get out. So some had Sambhog Milan, and they met and joined with Krishna in the romantic night of dancing in the moonlight with Krishna. But some were separated from Krishna. They couldn't get out. And they did not attain his presence. So these gopis are described here. So then what to do? They meditated to overcome their separation from Krishna. Because what brings people together is bhav. What cements people together is bhav, love. And what creates memory of someone is the intensity of one's bhav or love. Krishnam tad bhavana yukta. It's by bhav they got yukta. Yukta. Not by jnana they got yukta, but by bhav. Yukta means fully, means yog. Yukta means fully connected, fully saturated with. Krishnam tad bhavana yukta. So this is the fact that they couldn't be in his presence, but they had bhav. They had love for Krishna. But it wasn't, in this case, these Upanishads that appeared as gopis, their love wasn't to the highest percentage that it needed to be. So that bhav, they turned to meditation. If there's no bhav in the heart, meditation on God is impossible. It's because there, you can't meditate on an object that's not pleasing. So some object that you love is pleasing. Some object you have bhav and feelings for is naturally pleasing in your heart and mind. So it's easy to meditate. Oh, here, you're a devotee of Krishna. Meditate on Krishna. I don't want to. I don't feel like it. Why should I? So therefore, first we have to surrender and serve Krishna and develop and cultivate some feelings, some bhakti, devotion. Then devotion matures into bhav, and bhav develops and intensifies to prema. So the gopis, they overcame the pain of separation from Krishna, not joining him in the Rasa-lila by meditation. Tat bhavana. Krishna tat bhavana yukta. And that, of course, it advanced, it says in some later verses, that their dhyanam, their dadyur, dadyur means dhyanam, it actually advanced to samadhi, where they were fully absorbed in love. Then they could experience the joy of Krishna's embrace in their heart. This is the amazing feature of love of God at the highest level, at the level of prema. Because meeting and separation, you meet in separation, you can experience the beloved fully when you're separated or with your when you're with them. This is the premi bhakta's experience. Sometimes the Lord manifests directly, and sometimes he manifests fully in the heart. So this is the extent of their samadhi city. They're totally, it's described in some later verses, they're meditating on Krishna, I mean in the next verse, and then they, as they're meditating, they took him fully into their heart, and Krishna deeply manifested him in their manifested himself in their heart, and they embraced him tightly. So this was possible because they were fully absorbed in Krishna. The other gopis could simply meditate and experience. Because in Krishna, with Krishna, at the highest level of consciousness, there is no separation by time and space. Time and space controls us and controls this plane. Time, space, and distance. But in spiritual leelas, you meditate on Krishna with love, and you're his loving devotee, then Krishna is right there in your meditation. So this is the idea that, of course, we can draw some lesson in one sense for us, because some people, they want to seriously approach God, or even run to God or live in Vrindavan. But due to family restraints or concerns or their careers or whatever, they're bound and stuck in their families and their careers and their families and their education. So they can't physically be in the presence of Krishna or physically be in the holy land of Vrindavan. But then this whole chapter, this whole feature, facility is there. Krishna tad bhavana yukta. That if we have desire to love God and have desire to approach God and realize God, that's a type of bhav. It's a type of feeling, although not the fullest expression of spiritual emotions and spiritual ecstatic feelings that are come at the highest level of spiritual realization and attainment, bhava bhakti, prema bhakti. If that bhava is in the heart, that true feeling of God and interest and love for God or Krishna, then wherever we are, we can sit down and meditate. Someone can control and confine your body, but no one can control or confine your mind. The mind is free to wander wherever it wants to, or to fix on whatever it wants to fix on. So we may be married and we're living at home. We really want to run to God and serve Him day and night, but we can't. It's not our fortune or destiny right now. But doesn't stop our meditation. And sometimes we're living in a house where we're interested in God and no one else is. Mother and father may not be interested, or husband is and wife isn't, or whatever. Or children are and the parents aren't. So it has to become very secret. Their love for God, their blossoming interest for God has to be secret. But there's no more secret place than your mind. Even your own mother, or own husband or wife or father doesn't know what's going on in your mind. The mind is a vast frontier of secrecy, a vast unlimited realm of privacy. You want privacy? Then look within. You want happiness? Then look within. So the gopis are teaching, okay, we can't be in the presence of Krishna. You're stuck at home like us. Okay, then, of course, you may not be tat bhavana, yukta. You may not be totally united with Krishna in pure love or ecstatic feelings of surrender and dedication. But you can try. We're teaching you. We're meditating and it's working. And we're meditating and feeling satisfaction and pleasure. So anyone can meditate. The gopis are not great mystic yogis. They're housewives. They're housewives and some are unmarried girls. They're 14-year-old virgin girls. They're the greatest yogis because the object of their meditation is God. And that's the object of all yogis' meditation, God. So it doesn't matter your social position or your age or gender. You have a mind. You can fix it on God. You can think of God. But of course, in this age, it's not so easy to meditate. The gopis simply closed their eyes and meditated because their hearts were wide open. It's easy to close your eyes and meditate, as I mentioned, if your heart's wide open. If your heart's fully open to God, then you can meditate. So they had tat Krishna, tat bhavana, bhav, Krishna bhav. Their hearts were full. So how do we meditate in Kali Yuga? We need mantra, mantra meditation. There's meditation with mantra because the mantra will open the doors to meditation. The mantra will pacify, purify, and strengthen and satisfy the mind so one can meditate on. Then the mantra itself becomes the means and the goal of the meditation. The means of meditation is the mantra, and the goal of meditation is what's in the mantra. So the Radha Krishna Yuga Maha Mantra, we say Radha Krishna Yuga Maha Mantra because in the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. It is a mantra. It liberates, mantrayate. It liberates our mind from all non-spiritual things, ungodly things. But in that mantra is Radha and Krishna Yuga. Hare Krishna is Hare Rama, is Radha and Krishna, Radha Raman. They're there, Nam Rup Gun Leela. So now gopis can close their eyes and see Krishna and meditate on Krishna. Now we can close our eyes, chant the Maha Mantra and become purified and eventually by good association and proper cultivation develop Gopi Bhav. Has so much Gopi Bhav that we're Krishna Tadbhavana, Krishnam Tadbhavana. And then when we chant the Maha Mantra, we'll see Radha and Krishna dancing in our minds and dancing in the Rasa-lila within our hearts and minds. Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapurana Ki Jai. Madaram Samapya. Everything should end on the Maha Mantra. This is the sweetest thing. So 60 hours of classes, 30 days. The final class is chant Hare Krishna. Become a become a gopi. Become a gopi and dance with Krishna.